We're doing the Sefer HaMidot, this work on how a person is supposed to perfect their traits, and he has begun with the focus on the intellectual aspects, the Sha'ar HaDat, and we'll dedicate our learning tonight to Dvorah Bat Le'ah. Hashem should send her a speedy recovery, and she should be granted complete health swiftly. Her kindness has been a shining light, and Hashem should help her continue shining that light. It's very fitting that we're dedicating our learning to her. And then we wish her success in the hurdles that face her this week. The Magid Midovna had been discussing the concept of truth. And he had said that there is truth that is intrinsic, that does not require proofs. Here you have a situation where the Navi teaches us, it says that Samson had lied to Delilah numerous times. And time after time, she realizes that he lied to her. And then the moment of truth comes when he tells her where his strength comes from. And right away she says, that's it. He's told me the truth. And the Talmud tells us, Mikarin divrei emet. Words of truth are recognizable. So the Magid Midovna says, and we're up to the middle paragraph on the page, Mevo'ar mizeh, what we understand from this, V'neida v'na'amin, that we can know, we can believe, Ki yesh el hashomea chush tiv'i, that God implanted within the listener a natural instinct. Nita'o elokim bekerav ha'adam, that God planted this instinct in man, la'kir ha'emet, to be able to recognize truth, mi'beli ra'aya kol me'uma, without any proof. We do have this special capacity. V'ze k'mo asher el ri'at ha'inayim yeshnei hakarot, and this can be understood with an illusion. Just like when we speak about our sight, our capacity to see, there are two ways in which we recognize things. Echad mitzad siman sheyesh lo al hachefetz. One is a sign. I have my name written on the book. I know it's my book. We all have the same book. I open my book. I know that's my book. I wrote my name in it. Okay, that's a pretty distinct sign. Sheni mitzad tviyutayin b'lo shum siman. And the second one is when you can just recognize that's mine. You ask a person, well, how do you know? So Chazal say there's a concept of tviyutayin. My eye recognizes my object. Now, the Talmud discusses this. V'razal b'chochmatam ha-teora amru, and our sages in their pure wisdom said, ki tviyat ayin chashuv yoter misiman. That when you could recognize something, and you really know it's yours, that can carry more weight than a sign. A sign can be replicated, but when I recognize it, so I know to recognize it. And on some level, we all have that. Sometimes you'll ask a person, what does your teacher look like? And they'll start thinking, does he have a beard or doesn't he have a beard? Does he wear glasses or doesn't he wear glasses? You'd recognize him in a crowd, but when you suddenly have to describe him, it's difficult. And a sign is something that can change. You tell him he wears glasses, and that day he wears contact lenses, well, you won't find him in the crowd. You tell him he has a beard, and that day he'll shave the beard, and you won't find him in the crowd. But if you know that face, you know him, even though you might not be able to describe it, you might not have specific signs, but you have the picture, you know it. So that carries more weight than signs. You could say he has a flaming red beard. He has a huge bald spot. He has a scar going down his left cheek. Okay, those are all great signs. But the scar can be covered up with makeup. The beard can be shaved. The bald head can be covered with a wig. You could say you could change the signs. But when you have a tviyat ayin, when your eye has taken a hold, when you know what it looks like, so then it's not even broken down into components. You just know what a person looks like. And our sages said that carries more weight than signs.
Do you think as a cloud, like, the object as a cloud? Like,
yeah, it's a general knowledge of this object. I know to discern mine from others. You'll start asking me for signs, I might not be able to put it together. Kena davar b'shmiat ha'ozen. The same thing is true when it comes to what we hear. Sometimes you could be convinced of something because of a specific proof. Someone proved it to you. Okay, so you have one proof, and you've been convinced. The yeshini tatzem itzlo lidvar emet, and then you can have a situation where you know something is true, belotamu raya kol muma, but you can't put your finger on what the proof is. Rak itnadev libo leamin baze. But his heart tells him that's the truth. That's right. And Chazal told us that we all have that capacity to discern the truth, and it's something which just an internal light turns on and says that's right. And if you'll ask to put your finger on it to start proving it, you won't get it. And if we could go off topic slightly for a minute, the same thing is true the other way. Sometimes something inside us says, don't do it, don't do it. You know it's wrong, don't do it. And it's a powerful voice which we don't necessarily know how to explain. Why is it telling you not to do it? If you think back in life, you'll realize that sometimes you had this voice and you didn't listen to it. And afterwards you asked yourself, wait a second, why did I keep telling myself not to do that? And you can't put your finger on it. There have been a lot of works of research done trying to understand what does our subconscious understand. Sometimes a guy could be dating a girl and he says, this isn't it. And you ask him why, and sometimes people will spend many dates trying to explain to themselves why, because logically it should work. Something inside them says it's not going to work, this isn't right, this isn't for me. And it's a waste of time, because you know deep down inside this just isn't going to work, this isn't right. Well, the same thing goes for the truth. Sometimes you know it's right, and you can't put your finger on it. Why? I can't prove it. Omnam da, but he says, now I want you to know a point in this area. Ki kmo shel tviat ayin eino noheg b'chol adam. Just as when we say, with regards to objects, if you find an object and someone tells you that's mine, and you ask him, prove it, and he says, well, I could recognize it if I see it, but I don't have any signs. So the Talmud says the only one who could use that is Rak b'tamid chacham. We only trust the Talmud chacham. The average person, if he says, I recognize it, it's my bag, I recognize it, it's my car. We don't accept that.
Is that because of his
chokmah
or is
Yirat Shamayim? Asher ri'yato zaka uvura. Because his sight is pure and clear. Ken emunat adam bedavar. By the same token, when a person believes something is true, eino ra'aya, that does not form a proof. Ki im benefesh zakau Torah, unless his soul is pure. Just as only a pure person can say, I know, that's my piece of luggage. You guys ever stand at the carousel and see the piece of luggage coming out, and you keep telling yourself, I don't think that's mine, maybe it is mine, maybe. You see that we don't have tviyat ayin. Talmid Chacham knows when he does have tviyat ayin. His sight is pure. The same thing is true with emunah. It has to be someone who has a pure soul. Lo befet yasher yamin lechol davar. Not a fool who believes anything he hears. V'imayom yamin b'zeh ulmachar yamin ofcho. You could talk to him one day, and he's sure the truth is one way. You talk to him the next day, and he's convinced the truth is the other way. He's been convinced. He's been swayed. That's not what we're talking about. Aval adam asher en tiv'o lehamin bishmuot. But when you have a person who doesn't go with hearsay, he doesn't believe things that he's told, he's a skeptic. And then there's one thing which he feels, this is right, this is true. Now he's the biggest skeptic. He's always the one questioning everything you bring before him. But in this he tells you it's true. So then the person should not be bothered. If a person, very often people are very intellectual and they have reasons for everything, and they won't accept anything without a proof. But then suddenly there comes one thing which they can't prove. And yet it just feels this is true. You ask him and he says, I think this is true. Something inside me says it's true. But you don't do anything else based upon that. Are you going to do this based upon that? Says the Magen Duvna, yeah. The fact that you don't do anything else based upon that is an indication that in all other areas you're very, very careful to prove it. So then if in one thing you suddenly have this strong feeling, this is true, so then that's a sign, that's proof, that on that point, the reason the light turned on is because that's intrinsic truth. That's what he said. the Gemara is revealing to us that inside of us, we have this sensor, which can sometimes sense something and say, it's true. And if it doesn't turn on in other areas, there we try to find proofs and we try to verify, and that's called a smart person, a person who doesn't believe things without proof. But the fact that sometimes a light's going to turn on inside of him and say, this is right, that's a fantastic proof. I think that if a person is attuned to it, he'll see that this sometimes happens. I remember speaking to someone after he dated a girl 3 times. And I always believe you have to date a girl many times. I always tell guys, don't do anything before 30, 40 dates. There's so much to find out. And I meet so many guys who are 30, 40. There are so many guys. Every week or two, there's another guy who walks in here and says, I met the right one. And he's convinced after 4 or 5 dates or after 7 dates or after 10 dates. And then he goes another 10 dates and suddenly it's not the right one. And thank God we dated another 10 dates. And every 2 or 3 weeks, I have to argue with someone. One of the guys comes to me and says, why do you say 30, 40 dates? Don't you think that's a lot? We've only dated 5 dates, 6 dates. I'm convinced this is right. 20
days, maybe 15.
Okay. So when people have a colorful background, and then they date, that's my opinion. And the more I experience, the more I stand by my opinion. The story goes, a number of years ago, a guy comes up to me and he says, you know, I don't trust anyone. You know, I don't believe in anything. I dated a girl 3 dates. And you always said 30 dates. I believe in 80 dates, 100 dates. I don't believe you can know so fast. But I'm telling you, after 3 dates, this looks right. I said to him, what does your logic say? He says, my logic has many questions. I don't think this can work. I said, what do your feelings say? My feelings say, I can't know for beans. I have no clue if this is going to work. So who's telling me that this is right? I said, so who's talking? Who's doing the talking here? So he says, my neshama. I don't know how to explain it. I'm telling you, I went on the 3rd date and the girl wouldn't talk. The girl was like quiet as anything. He was coming because she wouldn't say a word. She'd say 2 sentences on the 1st date, 2 sentences on the 2nd date. And then he comes on the 3rd date and he says, what am I supposed to do? She's not doing any talking. So I said, you keep going and you talk to people who know her that there's no way to date this way. You don't stop for this and you don't marry for this. You realize you don't know anything and fine, you wait and time will tell. And this guy was the biggest skeptic I knew. I didn't trust anyone. He wouldn't lend you a nickel without bringing witnesses. Okay, really, really skeptical. And they're married. They went out on maybe 50 dates. I mean, after... From the get-go, he came back. I had another guy who dated hundreds of girls. He was in his 40s. And every girl didn't work out. And then one day he comes back to Yeshiva and he says, not only he told me, he told the girl. He told the girl at the end of the 1st date, he said, I'll see you the next date, my wife. Oh, and she says, what? And he said, I'm telling you, you're going to be my wife. And she flipped out. She called the shadchan and said, I'm not dating him again. She's his wife. They're still married today. And this was a guy who dated many girls. You know, it's not like he suddenly got excited over one girl. I mean, he dated a lot of girls. And when he met Mrs. Wright, he said, I know this is right. So you could say, you know, it was a self-fulfilling prophecy. You could say that. That's why I didn't bring the 2nd story first. The 1st story was a guy who rationally said, I don't understand what's going on here. He was questioning. He said, she hasn't said more than 2 sentences on a date. How could I think this is right? Logically, I don't know anything about her yet. Emotionally, I'm not excited yet. I don't know anything about her yet. But something's telling me this is right. And I feel like I'm just playing a game to verify what something inside me just clicked and said it's right. I agree.
What it should take a month might happen within a week with some people, and they say it feels right, versus what should happen in a week, not necessarily going to happen in a week. So my question is, I'm not sure.
Two things. A, he didn't believe it. He wasn't buying it. As the skeptic that he was, he kept dating and verifying. You know, he spent the next 50, at least 50 dates. I mean, I'm saying 50, it could have been 60 or 70. You know, he was still the skeptic. He didn't buy it. He went and dated and verified and asked and did research on the girl and did everything. I'm just saying it was interesting. I as a person standing on the sidelines, I had this conversation with him on the third date. And then I saw it play itself out. And I kept asking him, is something blinding you? Why are you so convinced this is right? And he kept saying, I'm not. Something's telling me it's right, and I'm not listening. I'm going to go through the motions. I'm going to check this out. And to the point where at one point he was so doubtful, because of all his doubts, he was ready to call it off. He luckily for him, he met a friend who said to him, wait a second, why are you calling this off? Is there any real problem or just a lot of questions? He said, no, there's no real problem. I just have so many questions. I don't have answers for you. So the guy told him, yeah, you're a skeptic. You have a lot of questions. So go verify them. That's not a reason to call it off. And after 56, I don't know how many dates, he did end up getting married. You know, the Rambam, with all the Rambam's logic, the Rambam in Pirkei Avos, the Rambam, when he explains the concept of a friend, he says there's a friendship that just clicks when two people meet. There is such a concept of a friendship. He says there's, it defines different types of friendships. When the Mishnah says every person is supposed to acquire a friend, you have to have a friend in life, at least one. So invest, try, find, and make sure you have at least one strong friendship in your lifetime. So the Rambam over there describes different types of friendships. And it's interesting because the Rambam expands the term of friend beyond what we would term friends. The Rambam basically calls every relationship a friendship, which isn't what we would say. But the Rambam seems to explain the word chaver in Hebrew, not like friend in English. Chaver like chibur, connection. Someone you're connected to. Knei lecha chaver. So the Rambam within the people you're connected to defines one type of connection, which is a click. That you just meet and it clicks. So you see, even the Rambam, with all the Rambam's logic, also agreed there is such a type of connection. But there it's not a question of truth. Meaning here, what the Chiddush and what we're seeing here, is that the Magen Midubna is saying that there's an element of truth, there's an internal compass or an internal sensor which can sometimes turn on and say, this is true. And that's where he's telling us an interesting new concept. Where we often think truth is something we have to understand, the Magen Midubna says there are two types of truth. Just like there are two types of recognition that our eye can behold. You could know what a person looks like without knowing specifics, without being able to draw the person, without being able to describe the person, but you do know what he looks like. By the same token, you have a capacity to recognize truth without being able to point your finger to the proofs. But again, he says that takes a person who's of a pure nature. Umagam lefi ma shekatav ha-mefaresh la-Rambam Zal al ma'amar v'Hashem Elokim emet. And furthermore, what it says in the commentary of the Rambam, that when the verse says Hashem is true, so it says shelo netzayer shum mitziut efshari ki machar amchuyavi velo nishar shum sefek meninut ba'olam al mitziuto v'achdutoy itbarach en elokim mibaladav oseretz b'chocho. That part of recognizing Hashem's truth is to recognize that there is no capacity for existence. Nothing can exist without Hashem's existence. And the person has to reach a recognition of this truth to the point where there is no doubt left in his mind over God's existence, God's singularity, and there is no potent force in the world other than him. He is the one whose force created the earth, etc. So, here we have to work out what's he saying.
It seems like the more you learn Torah, you have more questions, but that truth comes out. It's like it would be the opposite. You know, like you learn something, but it becomes more pratim and more things that are difficult to understand. But as you learn more, that sense of truth of itself like comes out.
Oh, so that's the question. Meaning, I think he's touching on such a critical point. Meaning, sometimes people feel that if they can't prove something, then they don't know it.
Yeah.
And what he's saying is that no, there are two types of knowledge. I always like to bring the the example of ourselves. If I ask you, how do you know you exist? You don't know you exist because you look in the mirror. You don't know you exist because you open your mouth and hear your voice. Our own existence is not something that we know from external stimuli. Think about it. You don't look at your hand and say, oh, good, I'm here, yeah, okay, I exist, yeah, I guess, right? Someone's sitting up here, I guess it's me. We don't do that. From the minute we're born, we have an intrinsic knowledge. I know I exist. And he's telling us that there are other things that we can know that do not stem from external stimuli. That Hashem gave us the capacity to know things without the external proofs. And it's a different type of knowledge. But we're opening a Pandora's box here. That's why he's saying you got to be very careful with this concept. Because if everything's going to revolve around this, notice he relegated this to the 13th chapter. After discussing all other forms of knowledge, he's been discussing many forms of knowledge. Now he touches on a new form of knowledge. But he's been discussing a lot of other things first, because you understand, this is a very dangerous concept, because if I don't have to prove, and I can't prove, I just feel, well, okay, what I feel is true is that I have to kill you. What's to stop me from doing that? Right? There's no limitations here. Everywhere. This is a concept that's lethal. I mean, this is a very, very dangerous concept. That doesn't mean it's false. It just means it's dangerous, and we have to be careful how we apply it. And remember that he cautioned us that it's not something for the layman. He says, just as we don't trust a person with a lost object, we don't trust the average person to say, I recognize it. Stand by the carousel when you're looking for your luggage. You'll see how many pieces of luggage look just like yours. And we don't have the capacity to recognize that. By the same token, we question the capacity of any person, whether he is pure enough to be able to say that he knows when it's his internal compass saying it's the truth. But it's important for us also to be aware that this concept exists.
Was any Torah brought down in that fashion?
I don't know what you mean.
In a sense where it was never brought down in tradition, but they reached this level of, like, I don't call it Nebuah, but like Ruach HaKodesh, where it's like, is that where it stems from? Like, they know, and therefore they brought Torah down in that fashion?
I don't think so. By tradition? I don't think so. But I would say that where this concept is very applicable is in a slightly different vein. Very often when a person studies Jewish philosophy, so he goes through the motions of learning the logical proofs. He learns any questions, and he learns any questions, and he learns any questions, and he tries to reach a point where he's comfortable with what he's learned. And an important part of learning is questioning. We always invite questions. We analyze, we try to understand better, we try to understand from different angles. At the end of the day, a person can reach a point where he feels like these are very, very strong proofs. And then if a person looks inside himself, he says to himself, okay, so the proofs, I understand the logic, I understand why they're true. Now, if you'll ask me, what's really driving me to the performance of mitzvot, to living a Torah lifestyle? It's not the proofs. It's something else.
It is.
And that can really scare a person. So then a person goes back and says, okay, so let me analyze this again. Wait a second. Wait, if the proofs made sense, why aren't they what drive me? So the truth is that the Magid Midubno addressed that in an earlier chapter. He said that we're dealing with concepts that are not tangible. Judaism doesn't put a man on a stick and say, bow to him. It's a little bit more difficult than that. Bow to that. Man has always searched to make the religion tangible. And the Torah tells you God is not something that you can perceive with your senses. So we spend our whole life being impressed by things that affect our senses. We're constantly our hunger, our thirst, our tiredness, When something is loud, when something is tasty, when something is scary, we're affected by our senses. And here we start learning philosophy, and we understand concepts, but they're all in the theoretical. Okay, so God's up there. There's nothing before me I see. I stand in prayer, and what am I praying to? To a being I don't see, that doesn't talk to me, that doesn't touch my senses. So my logic, theoretically, understands the concept. My feelings are not so affected, because our whole lives were affected by things that we sense. And we don't sense God in the same sense that we sense Him, that we sense other things in our lives. So a person can learn the theory and then not connect with the theory or not connect with the proofs. But he connects with something else. So on the one hand, he has to work out the logic. Because otherwise, who said you're on the right path? You can't just go blindly and say, it feels right, okay, keep going this way. Can't do that. But if at the end of the day, I've worked out the logic, and I think it's correct, but in all honesty, what drives me is not the logic, that doesn't have to bother me. That's where I can apply what the Magen Midubna just told us. Because I people sometimes feel it's a contradiction. I know I'm not working based on those proofs. I've worked out the proofs. I'm comfortable with the truth of the proofs, but that's not what's driving me. Says the Magen Midubna, that's okay. That needs a lot of thought, guys, and a lot of honesty.